It's always a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Dr. Kenneth Brander into our studio. He is visiting us from Israel. He's, of course, the president and Rosh Yeshiva at Or Torah Stone in the Holy Land, after many, many distinguished positions here in the U.S., which we've discussed many, many times on these airwaves. And this morning, he is accompanied by Harav Avishai Milner, who is the Rosh Yeshiva of Or Torah Stone's Neve Shmuel, the very famous, well-known, and certainly well-respected Neve Shmuel High School in Israel. First, Rabbi Brander, a pleasure to welcome you back to JM in the AM.
Thank you, Nachum. It's always a pleasure to be here, and considering that I listen to you on a regular basis, I feel I'm at home in Chutz Laaretz, and mazal tov to you on the birth of a grandson.
Thank
mazal
you very tov. Much, Baruch Hashem. Lots of great news, thank God, even during these difficult times. Harav Avishai Milner, a pleasure to welcome you to JM in the AM.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
I appreciate that. Are you a frequent visitor to the United States, or is it rare that you appear on this side of the world?
It's quite rare. It's quite rare. The last time I was here, I think it's about 15 years ago.
Seriously?
Seriously. The Jews like that, you know, that don't come here.
Is it painful before Shemini Atzeres, over the last 15 years, is it painful to leave Eretz Yisrael? And I ask that in that context because I think since Shemini Atzeret, anybody I speak to is in pain, even tourists or visitors, I should say, are in pain when they leave Israel. Are you in pain generally when you leave the Holy Land?
Generally, no, I wouldn't say so. It will be, yeah, here and there we go. Right. I can go to Chutz Laaretz, not very much to the United States, more right. than Europe, but no, I'm not in the Darga. That it's painful, you know.
The level.
We can enjoy a little bit also Chutz Laaretz. It's okay.
Rabbi Brander, you're going to have to take my word for it because I've experienced, as I've been to Israel a few times in the last few months, there is a degree of pain. I don't know what other word to use when one has to, at this point for sure, maybe even before October 7th, but at this point for sure, leave Aretz.
I feel the same way. I mean, I don't think I'm at the level that when I come for very short visits and I'm able to see some of my children and grandchildren that I feel painful, but particularly this time, although we're here for good reasons, it's painful. It's painful when I'm organizing my trips and I'm not here more than a certain amount of days. So if, God forbid, one of our students fall, even if I have to miss the Levaya, at least I can make a Shiva call. So to orchestrate your schedule around the fact that you want to be there for your family, for your extended Or Torah Stone family, you know, that's a painful reminder of what we're going through. But there's also a spirituality that you feel in Israel now, as I know you know, Nachum. Please, God, when you open your new branch of the Nachum Siegel Network in any part of Israel, I've offered multiple times on one of our campuses, and you know that, Nachum, there's a holiness, and when you leave the holiness, you feel, thank God, a little pain.
Now, any friend or relative of mine who has left Israel for the most noble of purposes, I mean, I'm talking about to come here to raise money for Israel, mm-hmm. I'm talking about to come for a family simcha, all of them felt the way you just described. What if, God forbid, someone from my neighborhood goes through a traumatic experience while I'm gone, or somebody that I'm connected to through the school network, or obviously even closer, God forbid, a real relative, and I'm so far away when they need me. And that was the attitude that I picked up over the last few months, that people are hesitant to leave, not just because of the pain, right. but they're hesitant to leave because I need to be al hamakom, I need to be on the spot right. if I'm needed. And now everyone in Israel feels they might be needed.
Exactly. I think... I didn't ask him beforehand, but I think, Rav Avishai, you still have children in Gaza, right?
I still have children. I have one. Actually, I had two sons in Gaza and two son-in-laws in the northern border. And they all went out, all got out from Gaza and northern border, and now one of them was called again. Yeah, he already came back home for two or three weeks, and then he was called again to go into Gaza, into the tunnels. He's in a special unit. And that's not simple. That's very, a lot of fear, a lot of thoughts. That's on the personal aspect. It's definitely not easy for me, for my daughter-in-law, for my wife, but all the family is in the story very much. And there's also, of course, the national story and the yeshiva story in Neve Shmuel. Excuse me, Neve Shmuel, we have, unfortunately, 9 graduates that fell in the war, have fallen in the war, and another 2 students that their father had been killed in the war, which makes Neve Shmuel...
Current students?
Current students.
His father's fell.
Yeah, current students. We have Kaddish every Tfilah. They remind us that they're there. You can't miss it. You can't miss it. And it makes things very, very complicated, very heavy, very tear-filled. That's one side. That's the heavy side. That's the sad side of the story. And it's definitely, it's complicated. It's complicated for the students, for the staff, for all the teachers. It's graduates that most of them, we know they just finished Neve Shmuel 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. Their faces, their personalities are still there. We know them, we remember them. And it's definitely very hard.
Let's backtrack for a minute. And I knew that this was going to be the difficulty with conducting this conversation because I said earlier, the two of you are on the front lines. You're not in Gaza, you're not holding weapons, but you're on the front lines. As you just said, your family is completely invested into this war. Mm-hmm. Not voluntarily. They're invested because they have no choice, because there's a close relative of yours who's now in Gaza trying to investigate and empty those tunnels. But let's go back for a moment. How long have you been the Rosh Yeshiva of Neve Shmuel?
I'm in Neve Shmuel for 7 years.
And how old is the high school? The high school was founded how
40.
Long? 40 years already.
Rabbi Riskin's first
Mamish
school.
Mamish when? That's the first school.
It's the first school Rabbi Riskin started.
Bni Bechori, the first yeshiva.
Mamash. And it's always had this incredible reputation.
Yeah.
And so you become Rosh Yeshiva 7 years ago. Obviously, anybody who fell in this war, outside of maybe the parents of these boys, but I would bet you knew them as well, you had a very close relationship with them. As you described, they just graduated within the last 3-4 years. And now, as you said, you know, I remember high school, there were kids, unfortunately, who were saying Kaddish because their parent may have passed away, whatever the situation was. But here you have a constant reminder, not just that someone lost somebody, but a constant reminder of the situation that Israel is in. And I don't just mean Eretz Israel, I mean the people of Israel, right? It's a constant reminder every tefillah that we are mourning so many hundreds that have already fallen in this war. It must be a completely different atmosphere in the high school than it was this time last year. Could you address that for a moment? How different is the avira in the high school now than it was, for instance, a year ago?
Mm-hmm. I would like to say two things, mm-hmm. two different aspects. The first aspect is what you just talked about. It's heavy, it's complicated. You know, we out of these, let's say, 9 graduates that fell, 4 of them have brothers that are learning now in Neve Shmuel. I mean, it's all...
So older brothers fell.
Older brothers fell, exactly. So every graduate, every soldier like that falls, you have the Shiva, and you have companion in going with the family and being with the families. You know, one of the students, Yonatan Semo, an Ethiopian graduator, the family came from Ethiopia to Yerushalayim, and now they're invested in Eretz Yisrael, Tzareinu. The night he was injured very hard, I immediately went to the hospital to be with the family over there. In only an hour later, all his friends from the high school also came to the hospital that night. The friendship, the togetherness is very, very hard. It's very
close. It's a tremendous bond.
Exactly, yeah. Unfortunately, he died 2 days later. And then we started, the Shiva and the funeral. And so the students... The current students are very are in the avira, the environment. It's hard, it's heavy, it's sad. That's on one side. On the other side, I must say, there's a big, every funeral, every boger, every family of the bogrim, that we speak with them, they come to the yeshiva to speak with the students, the parents, the brothers of these soldiers that have fallen. They give us so much strength and faith, and it's inspiring. The big spirit of emunah and koach, and being sure we're doing the right thing. So with the tzar and the pain comes also the big spirit that we're doing the mesirut nefesh, the ultimate mesirut nefesh the Jews had done for all through all their generations. And so the aklim is also of good
confidence or
confidence,
strength and
strength.
There's
a very big spirit. It goes together.
So if I can just add on to Rav Avishai's comments as somebody who, you know, engages with the school as well as the others. So when Yonatan Samu fell in his class also, in the class, and we keep the students together throughout the 4 years, so they build a gibush, they build a connection. And the last 2 years, 11th and 12th grade, on purpose, they have the same educator, unless there's some challenge, so that their Rebbe has a relationship with them, so that afterwards they have a relationship with them in the army.
Oh, so they've had them for 2 years.
So they have them for 2 years. So when Yonatan Samu fell in the same week or 10 days, so did Eitan Rosenzweig. And you just basically are dealing with the fact that...
It was Yonatan, Eitan, and Eitan, I believe.
Yes,
right?
Yonatan, Eitan Dishon, and Eitan Rosenzweig.
Right.
And they all fell within a week of each other. They weren't in the same unit. They were in different units. And I met one night with Rav Avishai and others in the Rebbe's home on a Saturday night. And they came together, the kids from the class, those who were able to get out of Gaza, because the army wouldn't let everybody out. There's 30-some-odd kids in the class, and they're all serving. And we just talked about issues. And you saw the energy, the spirit. They're not depressed. Not that they don't need... They're serious. And I have to tell you another thing that as someone with, as they would say, anayim chadashot, with new eyes.
Because you're from this side of the world, you mean?
Yeah, from this side of the world. You go to a funeral with someone like Yonatan or Eitan or, you know, 30 other students. And after the funeral, you have students sitting around the grave or standing around the grave and singing for an hour.
Right.
I've never seen that before.
Right.
And the singing,
it's happening very often.
Yeah, it happened
at Shiva as well, by the way.
Yeah, I have not been at a funeral.
Right. And that ended with songs.
That didn't end with songs.
Right.
And unfortunately, someone said to me, you lost your priority status on the airlines because I'm not flying as much. So I said, now I have
hazards of war.
I told them I'm global services at Herzl now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So, and when you're at these levayas, and some of them you speak at, most of them you don't because they're army, and you see a group of not five, not six, I'm talking about 100, 200 students sitting around and singing for an hour, you momish feel that you've gone up to heaven.
Yeah.
You momish feel that
the spiritual heights.
You just feel that you're not, and sometimes these levayas end at 2:30 in the morning.
Right.
Right? The Eitan Rosenzweig's funeral ended like 2:30 in the morning. 2:30 in the morning, something like that. I don't remember which one.
At Har Herzl?
At Har Herzl. I mean, it's because they don't happen in parallel.
They have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
They're working around the clock.
Yeah. So the bottom line.
Unfortunately, we saw that personally.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, it's just like the energy there. It's not depressing. It's sad. And people are going through. I'm meeting now with the parents post the shivas just to see how they're doing. It's difficult. It's challenging. I don't want to get away from that. But the bottom line is, it's not challenging, depressing, challenging. It's, there's just an energy that we're doing this for a reason. We're part of a larger narrative. And almost like Ezes Chut, what a merit that our family is part of that.
A privilege. Rabbi Brander and Rabbi Avishai Milner are in our studio here at JM and the AM. Let me do this with you, and you'll tell me if I'm off base or not. We see these funerals taking place, and very often we see the reaction of the parents and relatives of these fallen soldiers. And some of these reactions are unbelievable. I mean, there are speeches and letters that have been written and read by mothers, fathers, other relatives of these fallen soldiers that are not to be believed. And I'm wondering if for us, and maybe it's too much of a generalization, because there have been plenty of American-born parents that have done this, but I wonder for us if it's very difficult to relate to that, because we, the reality is, have never been as invested, right? Some people who come from our backgrounds do have some children and grandchildren in the army in Israel, but certainly not to the degree of somebody who grew up there, right, and who knew they were going to the army from when they were a little kid. Maybe we just can't relate to this incredible strength, spiritual height, you know, level of emunah and bitachon, frankly, that seems hard to believe on the surface.
So, you know, in the first few funerals I was at, there were some rabbis from America who came and asked if they could come with me. And I said, of course. I just understand I'm a Kohen, so I know that the places I can stand.
You have your limits, right?
I already know where places I can stand where I basically have the ability to participate without compromising any of the halachic standards. And one of them said to me something that was very powerful. He says, you know, it's almost like here, everybody knows where they're supposed to stand. Everybody knows where they're supposed to move. Everybody knows what they're supposed to do. It's almost like, you know the whole routine, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, I said, unfortunately, there's no one here that it's their first rodeo. And you definitely learn that. But I do think that people in Israel realize that they're playing for all Jewish eternity. This is not a temporary issue. This is a higher narrative here. These are young people who have given their lives to guarantee the safety and security of Jews, not just in Israel, but Jews in Teaneck and in Tallinn, Estonia, and in Europe and all other places. The fact that we had 18 shlichim leave their families all over the world, emissaries left their families and came back, like so many others who didn't need to come back, but they came back because they thought that this is their responsibility and they need to be part of this. I think that the parents are communicating that. When Mrs. Zussman spoke at her son's, who's a graduate of ours, who spoke at her son's Levaya, and she spoke about the responsibilities towards Medina Yisrael. Here is a person who was standing in front of her fallen son, and her words were as inspiring as any piece of Torah on Zionism of Rabbi Soloveitchik or Rav Kook. You just get transformed. The whole country gets transformed. And I think that anyone who comes to visit feels that energy, yeah, whether they're at Har Herzl or not. There's just an energy that we're here for a higher purpose. We're part of a story that hasn't been experienced since the establishment of the State of Israel. I think that we're in a place where this happened on Shmini Atzeret Simcha Torah, where we read the Torah. I think being born at this time, and Nachum, I'm sure you've seen this, I think there's a new Torah being born in Israel now. I think there's a new literature akin to what Rav Kook did that's happening now. I think there's, you know, a new form of Hasidism. We'll use the old text and we'll use the old language.
Right.
But I think there's a new paradigm that the old language and the old words will speak to. I think you're seeing Komahaba, the next step, and how the country will not be the same.
It's
and the
spirit, way we teach, but it's a new spirit.
Yeah.
It's a new spirit.
The way we teach Torah, the way Rav Avishai is going to teach in our school Torah, it's not going to be the same as it was a year ago. The conversations, the Torah, it's the same. We're not changing.
Now we just need you to convince every American rabbi and American Jewish educator to do the same thing, to make Eretz Yisrael much more of a central part of our Jewish education than it has been till this point.
I'll give you for instance,
right, Brander? Unfortunately, you're here to be my sounding board at the moment.
I'll
give you for instance. You know, Pesach's right around the corner. I know Purim Katan is tomorrow night, but Pesach is relatively around the corner. And there are going to be a lot of Shabbos HaGadol drushes that are going to be delivered in this country, here in the United States, as an example of the diaspora. I would hope that this year, some of those, how much maror do you need to use at the Seder, Shabbos HaGadol drushes, turn into what is the eventual fate of the Jewish people as it relates to Eretz Yisrael, since Pesach is, in fact, the Chag HaGeulah, the start of the Jewish people's journey to Israel. I would like to see the American rabbinate make that transformation from the mitzvah of Higadta L'Bincha to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael.
Well, first of all, I, as somebody who's a rabbi here for decades, I will not say anything against my lovely colleagues in America.
You'll leave that to me.
I'll leave that to you. You're much more, you have a much better ability to do it, and they'll listen to you more than they'll listen to me. But first of all, the American rabbinate, as well as the American Jewish community, all parts of the American Jewish community, has been very supportive.
Agreed.
And I have to just say that when you sit with your students, you know, on the Gaza border, or you sit with your students up north, where you have a total of, depending where you are, between 5 and 15 seconds to get to a safe place. I was last week on Wednesday, a place up north, and I was meeting with 60 of our students who just came out of Gaza. And there were rockets, and my wife calls me just to make sure, literally, that I'm still alive, because I was right by Tzvat when that was happening.
Oh, right. There was a rocket there.
Yeah.
Last Wednesday.
Yeah. So while I was up there with 60 of our students, and I told her that, you know, obviously, the fact that I was able to answer her answered the question. But the bottom line, I was going to say is that the American rabbinate, but I think that they need to speak about, if they're going to speak about maror, they should realize, and it's a whole machlokas, what's maror, what's not maror. Right. I think they have to speak about, you know, you dip the maror in charoset. I think they have to speak about the maror in charoset that we've been going through.
The maror in charoset of today.
Of today. Right. I think they have to speak about the fact that they can't forget about the maror in charoset, that the same students who have gone through the maror have shown us. Take Rav Avishai's Yonatan Samu in his pocket said that he wants all his organs to be donated. All his organs that could be donated.
Meaning it was a note found in his pocket.
A note found in his pocket.
Save other people.
Save other people. Body parts. Right. And then his parents came very shortly after, within 40 days, to speak to the students about the responsibility of to donate organs, and I believe one of the organ donors was there. And then you saw the mother listen to her son's heart.
Meaning organ recipient.
Organ recipients, was I'm that, sorry. Right. Organ recipients.
Her son's heart in someone else's body.
In someone else's body.
Unbelievable.
My point is, there's maror there, and there's also charoset.
Right.
And there has to be the ability for the American, not because, I mean, I would love everybody to move to Israel. It would solve a lot of the strategic challenges that we have now. But the bottom line is, even if they don't, I think for our own future in America, we have to realize the fact that we are living in a generation. Nachum, you and I are privileged to live in a generation that we are in front of us seeing the redemptive process with all of its challenges and all its opportunities.
But the soldiers and their parents get it even more than we do. They really get it. Rabbi Avishai Milner is here, and of course you've been listening to Rabbi Brander as we talk about the situation is, we'll get to Arturo Stone in a minute. I know you have a big night tonight, but these are such important topics for our audience. And we try to bridge the gap between the diaspora and Israel, and these are such important conversations. Ravishai, you described what it's like, the funeral, the shiva, what the parents go through, how it affects the entire yeshiva, how these graduates certainly know some of the students who are still in the yeshiva, and you know them so well because you've been there now for 7 years at the helm of the yeshiva. And we know about the shivas, the funerals and shivas that include music or song, as Rabbi Brander described it. I also was at a shiva call in Israel. It was exhilarating. What a terrible word to use for a shiva call. It was exhilarating listening to the fellow soldiers of the deceased describe to his parents what he was like on the battlefield. It's unbelievable. And then we leave the shiva call and I go back to my hotel and they're going back to Gaza. They literally are leaving the shiva call and going back to their base, right? What happens after shiva? Because these families must be so torn. It's very hard to keep the spirit of Mrs. Usman. It must be very hard to keep the spirit that she had the day that her video went viral from the funeral. What happens a few weeks or months later? We're now 4 months into the war. How are these families managing?
I'll tell you, it doesn't get easier, but I think the main thing, I speak from the point of view of, as a Rosh Yeshiva, I have students and we have also the families. The students are in years that we are busy building a good Jewish identity. Now, generally, in all years, we do it through seminars. We give lessons. We speak about Mesirut Nefesh. We speak about Am Yisrael, Torah Yisrael. Yeah, we speak, you know, we talk a lot for these values we believe in. And now, pitom, suddenly in this year, words are needless. You don't need to say anything. The things are, this is the reality. It's happening. I mean, my students can only see and hear the families. Rabbi Brander, I talked about the brave families, the thing you talked about, the mothers, the fathers, the family that they talk in the funeral. It's unbelievable. The faith, the emunah of Klal Yisrael, Klal Yisrael that comes before the individual.
Yeah. But you speak to them a month later also.
I speak with them a month later. They still have the great spirit, the great faith.
And the great agony, I would assume.
But they are... they're almost...
Again, invested. They're all in,
so
as we said.
They can't go back. A lot of them cannot go back to regular life. Yeah. I mean, the big spirit is not instead of the agony. Right. It's not instead...
it's with it.
It's legamo, it's with it.
The whole country, you wonder, can it go back to regular life? You know, my niece, it was described to me when her husband was in the army for, I don't know how many Shabbatot, I don't know how many weeks he was away. So someone said to me in an offhand comment, you know, she has trouble sleeping at night. Is there anybody there not having trouble sleeping at night? I mean, how do you sleep at night? How does your wife sleep at night?
The second question is better.
Right. I can sleep. Because she's really not sleeping.
She's really not sleeping, exactly. You know, I have a student. His father fell. He was a principal of another school, a very special man.
Hershkovitz.
Yossi Hershkovitz.
Yeah, we supposed to know about
Yossi Hershkovitz.
His son goes to our school.
His son learned in...
Everybody spoke about him when he passed away.
His son, whose name is Be'eri, that's his name, learned in Neve Shmuel. The son is, he's a lovely kid. The mother came and spoke with me two weeks ago. It's already, I think, 2 or 3 months maybe after the father fell. The student, he's still looking for himself. He's not, he's coming to school, he's coming, he's going. He can't collect himself.
Can't get
back
on track.
He can't get on track. The mother came and asked us, help us, help me. But she told us, look, no, she's strong. She has a strong family. She has faith. She speaks everywhere. She was here in the United States, I think, twice. Be'eri, her son was here once, and she was here last week or 2 weeks ago. She can speak the biggest words, and she can bring all of us the biggest spirit. But as a person, she told me, I can't get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
I can't decide. I don't know what I'm eating. She's
better at the national mission than exactly. The personal mission.
She can't cope. She can't cope with anything. She told me, look, my son is here. You do your best. I haven't got koach to do anything.
Yeah. You see these videos and you visit them. The soldiers who are in such high spirit and the singing, dancing, biyachad and atzeach and on to victory. And we see the videos of them in Gaza infiltrating, you know, homes and public buildings that used to belong to Hamas. And now here we are with the Israeli spirit. And then we hear that they leave the battlefield and life is not so easy for them. And I'm wondering if for some of these soldiers, as crazy as this is going to sound to an American, the battle is easier than when you come back and try to adjust to regular life.
It is so true. All of the soldiers, many of the soldiers, you know, I have Rabbanim, educators that came back from three or four months of battle. It's hard in both aspects. First of all, it's hard to come back to regular life.
Right. You normal know? Schedule.
Yeah, yeah, normal schedule to come and teach 30 students and to come back to your wife and children, etc. It's very hard. It's very hard.
Especially after what you've seen and what you've done.
What you've seen and more what you've done.
Right.
I spoke with a doctor. He's a doctor in hospital in regular days. Now he was in Gaza. For 4 months, he did...
Emergency medicine.
He saved lives. Right. He saved lives. He told me, how can I go back to the hospital and give here a medicine, give there a medicine? I mean, I'm saving lives every day. I don't know how to go back. That's a doctor. And it's right. It's right for the doctors and for the educators and for everybody. It's very, very hard to come back to life.
I think when I ask myself, like, what's my responsibilities, you know, right now it's answering halakhic questions that we get from students, which are also, the questions are far more uplifting than the answers. And it's making sure that, you know, they have what they need, or making sure that the schools. But for me right now, I think the most important thing that I believe that we're working on together with Rav Avishai and all the other schools is building a mental health infrastructure. Now, while the high schools have some mental health support from the government, they don't have enough. And the post-high schools, the Yeshivot Hezder and the seminaries where the Midrashot, like Midrashot Lindenbaum, where young women serve in the IDF, albeit not in combat units, but they've seen a lot, there's no mental health infrastructure. So we're building the mental health infrastructure so that the heads of schools, so that the teachers... So, I mean, you have mental health professionals in the schools that have lost children.
Right.
And they're the mental health professionals.
Yeah. No, I get it. Based on what we've heard from those who are full-time in this, organizations that help with trauma throughout the country during regular times, there's never going to be enough resources. It's an endless situation.
Right. So I've come to the conclusion that either I can complain, where's the government, where's this?
No, I hear that. We have to do as much as possible.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, I have no problem.
But I just want
no
people to understand just how vast a problem this is going
to
be.
Yeah. So I have no tightness to anybody. I just know that my responsibility is to make sure that Or Torah Stone builds the infrastructure necessary. Perhaps the most important thing that we could do now is the infrastructure necessary. Not that I know that we'll solve all the issues, but at least I can, you know to the best of my ability that we've done what we need to do and that there'll never be a request that we can't honor.
All right, we should get into, especially with tonight's big celebration going on in New York, which we'll give you the details about in a moment. What have you added to every institution? Because it seems that every institution that you lead at Or Torah Stone is somehow involved in something having to do with this war.
There isn't an institution at Or Torah Stone that doesn't have the head of school and all of the faculty who don't have children or grandchildren or spouses in the IDF. There isn't any institution, and every one of the kids in the class either has a brother, father, both, or mother IDF.
You remind me, at the beginning of the war, a friend of mine called me from Israel and said, I just met a family in Ramot that has 68 children, right. grandchildren, and great-grandchildren serving in the army.
So there's one I can think of in I can think of more than one who I've never counted how many, but might fit into that category.
Wow.
And then you have principals who what happens is they have their husbands in, they have their children in, and then they have their grandchildren living by them.
Right.
So they're making lunches for the first time
in years.
In years. As well as breakfast for the first time in years. And then they have to come to school and then lead a school of 500.
Yeah.
So as I said, I think that my responsibility, our responsibility, is to make sure that we give them the support. So there's no institution. So we've asked each head of school, including Rav Avishai, to tell us what you need. Let's build that infrastructure. So, for example, we're going to take all the heads of schools, and we're going to bring them together just to have a conversation amongst them. Because they're in a unique situation.
And similar situations.
And a similar situation. We're going to do that. We've created for all of the Kollel families who've just returned. And by the way, the Rabbanut didn't cancel the Bechina of last week, because most people who take the Rabbanut Bechina don't serve in the IDF.
Right.
But all of my students who took the Bechina
are there.
Are served in the IDF. So they went out of Gaza, they took the Bechina on Yeridea, and the Rosh Kollel was sending them videos to prepare for the Bechina while they're in their tanks and their armored personnel carriers and everything else like that. But how do we make sure that as they rejoin their families, their children, their spouses, so we're creating, whether it is making sure that there are, you know, sponsor, making sure that they get the ability to have breakfast together, go out to a restaurant. We're not talking about fancy restaurants. Right. They don't have to go to the Orient or the...
Just time to spend
together. Yeah, they can go to Cafeet and have a thing. So we're en masse. I mean, but we're not talking about for 10. We're talking about, you know, for 1,000.
Right.
We're doing things of that nature. And we're building the... We're increasing the mental health staff.
And the capabilities.
Right.
Is it a normal high school year? I mean, I know that's a ridiculous question, but I mean, are there still studies going on? Are the students still involved in their regular course of studies and exams?
That's a wonderful question. The answer is no and yes. Mainly not. Look, I have in Neve Shmuel, now yeshiva, from the beginning of the war, six, seven rabbanim
right.
are in the army.
Right.
Most of the madrichim of the pnimiya, of the dormitories, are in the army.
Right.
Another 15 or 20 teachers, secular teachers, are in it. Now,
did you have to become a dorm counselor again?
Yes.
He's always a dorm counselor.
I know, but now he's got to be there now on a daily basis.
Exactly. Of course, so in the beginning, we learned less hours, etc.
Right. You made adjustments.
But nothing is perfect in this year, nothing. Right. There's a lot of, I would say, holes in the learning. And the other thing is that the head, the mind of the student is not there.
It drifts away.
Exactly. Even with, you know, the Ramim are there, the teachers are there.
And by the way, this is being replicated throughout the whole country. Every high school student, boy and girl, must be going through the same thing.
Exactly.
The same way Rav Avishai says there's holes, and the other hand is...
It's being filled with other stuff. That's good stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that all his students, the first few days, what they do, all the sukkahs in the frat. Yeah. Who took down the sukkahs?
Attentive to the needs of others.
Yeah, we had 70... We had 70 people from the south who came to live in our retreat center.
Right.
I mean, it's a half a star retreat center. I don't want you know. And who ran the retreat center?
Right.
The students of Neve Shmuel.
Right.
Every single year there's a student in Neve Shmuel that finishes Shas. So maybe this year there won't be a student that finishes Shas.
Someone told me that I don't remember what neighborhood it was in. Maybe it was in Beit Shemesh. Mm-hmm. Where they walked in at some point right after the war began, and they were the only adult male, basically, in the shul.
Right.
Anybody else was over 50 or under 16 years old.
Right.
Everybody's missing. Efrat must be like that. Efrat must be,
is all
must
schools
be void
like
of
all schools
void
like
of men between 20 and 50.
Every single school has what's called a kabat, a katzin bitchoni. And I told the head of the army, I mean, again, this is a a rabbi who's, you know, most years is spent in America, and thought the Shin Gimel meant Shilte Geborim, not a guard tower. Until someone explained to me that Shilte Geborim is also a form of a guard tower. But the bottom line is, so I told the head of the army, I said, for the Gush Etzion area, I said, you have these people who are in charge of the security of our girls' schools. I said, in case there's a terrorist, God forbid, attack. I said, they're both in the north. I said, you haven't even changed who's in charge. I said, you're going to, first of all, they don't have on their phones because some of them are in Lebanon. Right. And second of all, even if they have their phones, by the time you reach them, they're not getting back in time to deal with this. It's just like there was a whole paradigm shift in what you had to do. But I think that the Jewish community is very adaptable and can move. And, you know, we all of us, with the help of so many, did that. And I don't think we're out of this yet. Forget about it. I'm not talking about just the war and the fact that there might be something up north. I think this will be a multi-year experience, and we'll have to adapt, not just the way we teach, but in our sensitivities. And even though there are more holes, I have a son in Yerucham. Yerucham has also lost 7, 8, 9. His older Colwell, the person he learned with in the Colwell, is no longer amongst the living. And yes, it's affected how many Black Gemara he's learned. But it, okay. On the other hand, he's learned there's the Eish Levanan, the Eish Shchora. There's right. The black letters, and there's the spiritual space between the letters.
And that's been enhanced.
That's been enhanced.
By the way, there is a deadline. Because we've been told that March 10th begins Ramadan. The war has to be over before Ramadan. That's what we've been told by different people who are conjecturing. How on earth could Israel even think of being in battle with the enemy during their holiday? The absurdity of which I won't even get into right now. Harav Avishai, I hope you understand this reference. You were born in Israel, I assume. What city were you born in?
Ramat Gan.
In Ramat Gan.
My parents.
Near Givatayim.
Near Givatayim, exactly.
Near that wonderful falafel place between Ramat Gan and Bnei Brak.
Well, one of them.
Yeah, one of them. Your parents were, you were about to say what?
My parents made Aliyah from South Africa.
Wow.
In the 60s.
Lucky you're not in South Africa now. They wouldn't let you make Aliyah.
Exactly.
You know that, by the way?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know our friend Rav Doron Peretz?
Of course.
You know what he's going through now?
I speak to Doron every week.
Oh, Baruch Hashem.
Doron and I speak every week.
His missing son is an international story, and we went to visit him, obviously, when we were in Israel, but... Mm. But he's also someone synonymous with the South African Jewish community.
Right.
He's embarrassed by the way South Africa's reacted to all this and the fact of how difficult it is to make Aliyah now if you're in South Africa. So Baruch Hashem, your parents decided to do what they did.
Baruch Hashem.
This is definitely the first time I've heard Rav Avishai speak English since I've been in Israel.
Wow. You brought him here not knowing if he could speak English, right, Brandon?
We have to
have an off-air conversation between you.
I figured you can translate anything.
You can depend on Rabbi Brandon. He checked it.
Yeah.
So... I'm on the air since 1983. Do you know how many terrorist attacks there have been and wars there have been in Israel since 1983? Of course you do. I mean, we can sit here and name them all morning long. Every time I say to people like Rabbi Brander and other guests, it's amazing how the enemy always gets our best and brightest. The enemy always takes from us these boys and girls who are the gems of our community. And 40 years later, I'm going to explain to you why. Because all of them are our best and brightest. It is unbelievable the young men and young women that are being raised in Medinat Yisrael right now. And every time we hear of something, I mean, what you're going through with the number of students is unbelievable. Every time we hear of an episode where someone's been killed, there's always an incredible story with how, even by the way, those who are at the Nova Festival, same thing. You hear about them, dedication to family, dedication to their people, even if they weren't ritually the way we are, that everybody is being raised in such incredible spirit and amazing and such an amazing atmosphere. What is your comment about that?
I'll tell you. First of all, I agree. I definitely agree. Each of them was very, very special. They were different from each other. All kinds. Of, yeah. They're very different, but right. each of them is so perfect, so special, so unique. It's been made there. We have one of the things we learned in this war is we have a wonderful, outstanding generation.
Yeah.
I think we knew it before. We also yeah. liked from here and there to speak about the young generation, you know, they're not like us, all kinds of things. Outstanding generation that heard the kriya that, of Hineni. I'm here yeah. for what is need.
They answered the call.
They answered the call immediately. Immediately with the sacrifice, with yeah. all the heart. Yeah. And the other thing I said, look, the understanding that they're part of history and it's their turn and they're giving it with all the heart. And the other thing I wanted to say that they all of them I think they're telling us don't tell all that we were so special only after we're there, after we fall. If we could see the good of every
before they leave
of all our students yeah. all our students yeah. I have hundreds
oh,
of
what a lesson this is for the teachers
I have
out
hundreds
there.
Of students
yeah
all of them
and parents
are good
yeah
with good heart with mesirut nefesh with we have to see it not after the fall
during
their lives and we'll have a better world.
All right, I guess at some point I should mention the dinner tonight. Although I
it's sold out, so don't worry about it.
Oh, is it sold out? Thank God. Now I don't feel guilty. But I mean, this is so important. You know how important this conversation is to yes. the American Jewish community. You know it.
Yes.
It's a very important conversation. This has been an unbelievable evaluation of what our people are going through at this time. By the way, you know, it's funny. The song, I don't know if you saw the Kosher Halftime Show, but it ended with Avram Fried singing with the soldiers the song Ninatzeach, right? And he revealed to me that it's an old song in Israel, that it's been around for many, yeah. many. And I said to him, I was in Kerem Biavne in the late 70s and early 80s. I don't remember this song. He goes, what are you talking about? That whole Hesdush. So I say to my brother, who's a drop younger than me, I said, you ever hear the song? He said, did I ever hear the song? Of course I heard the song. I said, how'd you hear the song? He goes, you don't realize, when you were in Kerem Biavne, it was before OC Rock, before yeah. the Lebanon War, why would anybody sing the song? I, meaning him, yeah. I was there during the Lebanon War. It's all we sang. We lost soldiers. We had missing soldiers from Kerem Biavne. That's all we sang was that song. So why do I bring this up? I bring this up because I was curious what the reaction would be of my son, who's now in Yeshiva Rakoto. You know, you hear about the war and the start of the brutal attack, and you wonder, because I don't have to tell you, and this is not a criticism. I'm not judging anybody. But there are students who left Israel at the suggestion of their parents, and you know, and they felt that was the best thing for them. Not a criticism at all. But I call my son, after Shmini Atzeres Simchas Torah, at Yeshiva Rakoto, and I say, what's your reaction to this? You've just watched half the yeshiva go off to battle. What? He says, there is nowhere else I'd rather be.
Right.
And that, I believe, he got from the spirit and the atmosphere that Rav Avishai and you have been describing this morning.
100%. There is nowhere else I would like to be. It's a privilege to be partners with Rav Avishai and so many others at Or Torah Stone. It's a privilege to see all of our commitments. We all have children in the army. We all are struggling with different things. We're dealing with all the issues that we have to deal with. And my other children are doing like their own mental health interventions and saying, Abba, you're helping everybody else who's helping you and stuff like that.
At least it's free and unlimited. Thank God for that.
Unlimited. I'm not sure how effective it is, but free and unlimited. And comes from a loving place.
Yeah.
But it's just, we're living history. We're living history. And the final pages, most of the pages haven't been written of this chapter, but we're living history. And we just have to make sure that we're doing our best. And I pray to God every single day that he should give me the Seichel HaYashar, a clarity of vision to do what we have to do. Amen. And we talk with my colleagues to get their guidance. But as I think Rav Avishai said, we have to realize how blessed we are with this generation, and they're not a generation into themselves, because they put their lives on hold, they put their lives on the line. So many of them, the first few days, they didn't run away from the battle. they literally ran to the battle, and they, Elchanan Kalmanson, he was sitting in Utniel. He got out of the Yuntif table with his brother and his nephew, and he went to Be'eri, and he saved 100 people. He fell. He saved 100 people. And when you sit with his father, he'll say, what a schut I had to have such a child. And then when the people from Be'eri come and they say, you know, your son's a gibor, and I was there when this happened, and Rabbi Kalmanson says, no, you were the gibor, you hid for so long. He goes, no, we had no choice, but your son had a choice. And then they say to him, I'm not sure, we who are not formally observant, I'm not sure we would have come if there was a terrorist attack in Utniel. But we've learned that there's a larger narrative here, and we can't define ourselves by the small, insignificant things that separate us. I think that we're just living, we forgot that that's part of our DNA before October 7th.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that we've been reminded about that in a very painful way, but inspirational in the same way.
Oh, amazing. Mazal Tov to Ann and Jeremy Pava, Rabbi David Kalb, Julia Frankston Morris, and Ariel Frankston Morris. These are all honorees tonight.
They're amazing people who have given a lot to the Jewish community. The Pavas are world leaders, literally world leaders. They've helped so many institutions. Rabbi Kalb is transforming the lives of the people he teaches. And to have alumni like the Frankston Morris is literally a blessing. It's a privilege to be able to honor them. It's a privilege to be able to get together. And because of the fact we postponed this dinner.
Right, it was supposed to be earlier.
Yeah, and we felt that we should still do it, but in a more muted way.
Right, and focusing on the war.
And focusing on the war. And when you come in, there will be a table set with pictures and bios of every one of our students that have fallen. Because I think they would have wanted us to do this. I had some conversation with some of the parents, but we can't forget them. And we're doing this in order to make sure that we can continue to do the work.
Certain families and institutions have been hit very hard. Mm-hmm. And again, we don't like labels and we don't like separation, but we should acknowledge that the religious Zionist community has been hit particularly hard in this war.
There will be studies that will be done after this is over. Please God, soon. I wouldn't mind if it was over by March 10th.
you would take that, huh?
I'd take that. In
the same way I would take if all the hostages were home this Shabbat
tomorrow.
Hit the 20th,
yes,
Shabbat.
Yes. As I speak to Doron Peretz, you know, before each Shabbat, I won't walk into Shabbos without speaking to him.
And we pray for the release of Daniel Shimon, right, Ben Sharon, right, to whom we are still assuming, right, is in Be'ezrat Hashem alive.
Yes.
Daniel Shimon Ben Sharon. Yeah. Tonight's Yard Torah Stone dinner. It's sold out, but Mazal Tov, of course, to Rabbi Brander and Harav Milner, and to everybody who's going to be there tonight, focusing on the challenge of Israel at war and rising to that challenge. Yard Torah Stone information, if you want to support anything we discussed this morning, including the brand new mental health initiative, which is vital. You could actually, you know, you could hop on to the Yard Torah Stone bandwagon with a new initiative, OTS.org.il. I visited with Ari Riskin in August. It was a wonderful encounter.
Thank God.
You'll please send them our best, of course.
I will definitely do.
You know what he means to us. I don't have
to
tell you.
Of course.
As Arturo Stone celebrates his 40th year. And Harav Avishai Milner, although I say this very often when I meet people, I now have to put on my schedule to visit your high school.
You have to see it.
Forget
you're more than
all
welcome.
The other institutions. Yeah. I got to make it to your high school and see you in action. And be inspired
amazing.
By an incredible student body and all the people that are associated with the work that you do. And Kol HaKavod, you are raising this next generation of fighters for Israel. And I don't necessarily mean army fighters. Please God, there should be real peace. But fighters for Israel, fighters for Torah, fighters for Eretz Yisrael, fighters for the heritage and tradition of the Jewish people.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And
you're more than invited.
Thank you.
We're all part of the history now, and we are on the right side of the history, right side. Bezrat Hashem, nenatzeach.
Bezrat Hashem, nenatzeach, biyachad, with togetherness and with care and concern for our fellow brothers and sisters. Rabbi Brander, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
You'll join us when I come to visit?
Of course. My office is right not too far from his.
You're right in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I'm right in the neighborhood. Still right in the neighborhood. And thank you, Nachum, for what you do for all over the world Jewry. You have been a cohesive force during this troubling and tragic time.
We are trying our best.
You're doing amazing.
One of our greatest functions, I still believe, is to bridge the gap between Israel and the diaspora. And
which
I think today people feel a bit closer.
Right.
Because of this conversation. OTS.org.il, support the work of Rabbi Brander, Harav Avishai Milner, and the thousands of people they have around the world who are spreading Torah and our incredible tradition and heritage on a daily basis. More coming up. You're listening to JM in the AM.